Hey listeners, before we start, I want to tell you about MatchRx, who is sponsoring this episode. I've been with MatchRx for probably a dozen years. You're likely familiar with them, but for those of you that may not be, MatchRx is the online marketplace where independent pharmacies can buy and sell overstock prescription meds. There's over 7,000 pharmacies, including mine, in this vibrant community. You can manage everything easily with their website and mobile app. And if you need any help, they'll train you in under 5 minutes. It's fast, simple, and reliable. And MatchRx is fully DSCSA compliant, so you can trust it. I use MatchRx for my inventory needs, and I'd recommend you use them too. Visit MatchRx.com today and tell them I sent you. You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Autumn and Leanne, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
I'm Leanne Haddad. I'm one of the co-founders of ShiftRx.
I'm Autumn Kyoko Cushman. I'm one of the other co-founders of ShiftRx.
Today, we're going to talk about ShiftRx. We are a seamless placement platform. We make it easy for independent facilities to find staff and easily integrate those people into their clinical workflows.
Just this morning, one of my technicians said to me, I'm moving on to a different place because they're open weekends. It's going to be better for me and so on. I had just a pleasant demeanor with her. It was a part-time gig that we had for her and things like that.
Sure.
But inside, I was saying, oh, crap. If someone said to me, like, Mike, part of your store burned down, or you had a robbery last night, or whatever, I'd say, oh, that's just another Monday. But I think I can speak on behalf of our listeners. All the staffing stuff is just a pain in the ass.
Sure. When you leave someone good, too, it's a headache. And to retrain people and find people, it's time consuming.
Well, Leanne, she's not that good. She wasn't that good. She came in. She was decent. She was decent, but she had to miss a few shifts because of someone she was caring for needed more help and things like that. So we didn't lose a lot. But it's just a pain in the ass to start that thought process up again. Leanne and Autumn, what is the worst part of your week?
Fundraising. We have a ton of demand, honestly. So like our social medias, like we have hundreds of messages, so many emails coming in. Obviously, the platform's new, so there's a few issues here and there. So we are constantly talking to pharmacists and technicians all day. I've worked in pharmacy my whole life. I've worked customer service jobs. I'm used to that. It can get exhausting, obviously, but that's part of our mission. We want to help pharmacy professionals. Other than that, though, fundraising has been just awful for me. Yeah. So we're trying to raise some capital right now so that can help us expand and grow our team and things like that. But it is very time consuming and it just pulls us away from running the actual business itself.
Are you doing that just as if people might find support staff through your program? Is there similar things for fundraising? Are you going through an app or a company of some sort?
We're not going through a platform or an app. There are things that exist like that. However, they are very predatory in nature, and you'll find that there's a lot of programs out there that want you to pay to pitch, or there's angel syndicates where they want you to pay a fee. And what we've found is that the best VCs come with warm introductions, and it is time consuming. You really have to build up a network, especially if you're first-time founders like us. And we're fortunate that we have a lot of connections in this space through my fiance and his startup, and through friends in the ecosystem. However, it is very time consuming to fundraise. And it's a lot when you're running a business that is filling such a need. And it's also difficult when you talk to investors that don't know the pharmacy space. We have talked to many of them that are not bullish on pharmacy, they're bearish. They don't think the need is really there. And they, in my mind, foolishly believe that all pharmacists and technicians are going to be replaced very soon with AI and robotics. But when you talk to ChatGPT and you ask him to make a dad joke, he says, burn the house down, kids. That's not ready to interact with patients.
Where do you guys come up with those names then when you're looking for VCs and things like that? Is there a database of some sort, or are you in a geographical area of people that you know and things like that?
Yes, there are databases of some sorts. However, most of the VCs that we've talked to have been introductions from some of our angel investors and then introductions through people in our network. And we've been fortunate to meet some really great investors, and hopefully we're going to be closing our seed round here soon. And so for me, I would not say fundraising is the worst part of the week, even though that's my primary job as CEO is doing our fundraising. For me, it's a lot harder to deal with some of the customer issues that come through. When we onboard in a new state, we send something out saying, hey, what you see here is our earliest users. There might be limited shifts available, and the remote ones tend to go like that very quickly, obviously.
Remote being that they get to work from home, not remote in a different city or something, just remote working from home.
So there are, like, let's say you're a pharmacist that lives in California and you're licensed in California and Texas. You could log onto our platform and request to pick up one of the remote MTM shifts in Texas. So those shifts go very quickly. We do not require people to pay the background check first to see the shifts. They don't have to pay the background check and they can see the shifts. You do have to pay that background check if you want to apply for a shift. And so what we've had happen quite a bit over the last couple of weeks is someone will pay their background check and not get accepted for the shift that they're picking up because there's a lot of people applying. And then they angrily email us and say, if you don't refund my money, then we're going to go all over social media and make sure nobody uses you. People can get really nasty, and it's heartbreaking and it's disheartening because we're like really trying to build a better option for pharmacists and technicians as well as independent owners. We have pharmacists who have been incredibly supportive that have been great educational resources. We have an advisor that's a pharmacist currently, Dr. Susie Solomon, and she's the founder of the Pharmacist Moms Group. But we also have two pharmacists who are not on the team in an official capacity, like they're not getting paid and they don't have equity in the company. We are not getting paid either, but they have been gone above and beyond and have been incredible and just advising us in the state that we're working in and have given different perspectives and help answer questions in the pharmacy groups where we have tried to get in, but we get kicked out because we're not pharmacists. We're really thankful for the community support on that side as well. Our demographic of people, we thought the majority would be semi-retired and working moms because they needed a more flexible schedule. And while that is a big demographic for us, we've also found that there are a lot of clinical pharmacists who genuinely are connected to the field and feel bad about what's happening in retail. And so they'll want to pick up shifts, even though they're a clinical pharmacist, in the independent retail setting and see what it's like over there. And they can do so with our AI onboarding tools because they might not have felt comfortable picking up shifts in that environment previously, but we walk them through everything that's expected of a temporary provider at each individual facility. So that's their prescription fulfillment software, their attire that's expected, where they put their personal belongings, where they park. And so they feel really well equipped to go into these new environments. And we found that they really enjoy it because it breaks up our routine schedule for them.
Speaking of having people go into different areas and so on, I did see on a press release you had, you're trying not to fill spots that were made vacant by any of these recent walkouts with some of the bigger chains.
Yeah, so we are not currently working with strike locations. That's not to say that we won't work with those companies in the future, but we will not be working with them in the capacity of filling those strike location openings. Leanne and I are both former clinicians. I was in the Navy for almost 5 years working in hematology, oncology, and then in executive medicine. And Leanne was a pharmacy tech, a lead tech and manager at CVS for almost 6 years. So for us, we think that the providers need to be put first. And for so long that the alignment has been out for providers and corporate. And so when you begin to shift that alignment back to where it needs to be and the providers are getting paid more, they have more flexible schedules, and they have that transparency. None of that happens without someone like us coming in and making sure that transparency is there and that these companies are held accountable. So we don't want to add to the problem. We're truly trying to shift the power back to the providers.
All right, ladies. So when you were thinking of this, what holes did you think needed to be filled? And it seems that in business now is not just filling a need, but you want to have a little bit of an idea or flair to that in order to attract investors. It seems like there are different employment staffing things than that. Yeah. What hole are you filling compared to that competition? What was your competition not bringing that you thought, aha, we can do this better?
First is that traditional staffing agencies, they take a large cut of whatever the provider is making. Mm. They have recruiters, they have a lot of that overhead. And for us, we can cut that out. And so we become cheaper to the facilities. And in turn, our clinicians can be paid more. And we also offer the transparency from end to end. And so then when you look at the second portion of that, we felt like the integration piece was missing from these traditional staffing agencies and from current existing gig work platforms that have been done in nursing. And that integration piece is giving the providers that onboarding and the tools to be successful when they're placed in temporary environments. And so let's say at Mike's Pharmacy, you use Pioneer Rx and these are the insurances you accept. A traditional staffing agency will just throw a provider in there. And now that initial burden is increased on whoever you have at your pharmacy to train them up to speed. But what we can do is when we onboard a facility, we say, what is everything you would expect of your temporary provider? We collect all that information. We create this short onboarding module ranging anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes, just depending on what specialty you're in. And that previews everything, including the software that you're using at your facility with that provider before they've ever stepped foot into there. So you can require that the facility software, you can basically say like, when you bring in a provider, they have to know Pioneer Rx. But if you're open to that cross-training opportunity for pharmacists and technicians, which we think is extremely valuable, you can say, we're willing to take a chance on this onboarding module. Our provider goes through it. They learn Pioneer Rx or Liberty. And now when they go into your pharmacy, they're ready to go. And we've had some success with Walgreens pharmacists picking up shifts at independent retails and getting the hang of Pioneer Rx like that.
Do you think other competitors of yours weren't doing that? Or do you think that task was so onerous and you found better ways to smooth that out?
Sure. AI is really helpful here. Because when we collect that facility familiarization form from the independent pharmacy, we can basically create a tailored onboarding module in less than an hour. So it's not as tedious as it would have been before.
If I'm going into a business, I'm always going to look at the current models of things, the current competitors. And it seems that in today's day and age, when I look at somebody, I'm going to say they just seem stale. They don't have the social media. They maybe don't have the good apps. They're maybe working on a model that was true 10, 15 years ago. I've been impressed with your social media presence. Does that go along with the whole kit of saying that this is the new generation of staffing?
I do think so. I think our social media presence has brought us awareness and credibility that wouldn't have been lended to us previously. I think providers in general are skeptical to adopting new trends, especially in pharmacy. And I think that our social media presence has brought us awareness and people see us on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook and collaborating with some of these leaders in this space, meeting with people like yourself, like Shane or Bled. And then to them, that adds us legitimacy because when we first started this, we had a lot of people who were like, seeing our rates and thinking it was a scam. And they couldn't comprehend how we were able to have some of those rates. And in our mind, we hadn't even thought about that. We were like, oh, we cut out the middleman. And so we charge the facility less, our providers get paid more. And people all over Facebook were like, this has to be a scam. And we were like, it's not. And it's same day pay. And they were like, no. So we really started hammering in on our social media presence to tell people our story and say, hey, we are providers. We're doing something that we think is more efficient and get the word out there for us because we couldn't hire a fancy marketing team. We couldn't buy billboard ads. And I think people were skeptical, rightfully so, to give us a chance.
Yeah. Even like attending conferences and things like these large companies know about us, like presidents of these pharmacist association boards, they know about us. So it's definitely helped the social media presence.
I have a lot of those people that know me too, but it's in a negative sense. Don't let him near any of this. But where is the efficiency then? Your prices are lower. I imagine you're not trying to make a race to the bottom and pay less and all that kind of stuff. I imagine you're trying to pick that up with efficiencies. What are those efficiencies?
Yeah. So for us, like we said, we don't have any recruiters. At the beginning, we are recruiting a little bit just to make sure those shifts are getting filled. But what we hope to have here in the future is that the shift commission will adjust dynamically based on the priority of the shifts. If you need coverage for your pharmacy 8 weeks out and you're posting that, then you'll be at that lowest tier of commission, which is 10%. And if you need someone day of, that goes all the way up to 45%. But at the end of the day, traditional staffing agencies take anywhere from 60 to 120% of what the provider is actually making. And so we're cheaper to the facilities, and then our providers in turn get paid $5, $10 more an hour, and then they get that instant cash out after their shift is over.
That's kind of a new trend with the same day pay. We haven't done that ourselves, but I know some people are doing that. My only concern with some of that same day stuff, if you have an employee, is they almost get to decide. I haven't thought this through, but they almost get to decide, yeah, I'm employed today and I need that, so I'm going to work and I'm going to get the money, but tomorrow I don't really need the money too much, so I'm going to not be there. That's probably not true. That's just a thought I have.
Sure. So for us, that I would say that's like our goal is that we have a variety of different independent facilities that might need ad hoc coverage. So maybe you have someone that's out sick or you have the holidays that need to be covered.
That's exactly what you guys need. It's almost like the exact opposite, Autumn. What's good for you guys, that's a selling point of people saying they can do it when they want to. For us, it's like the opposite. So Autumn and Leanne, what was the biggest surprise that you thought, of course, this is this way in the industry, but it wasn't?
We had some preconceived notion when we first started this, that this is such a great deal and the options out there are terrible. And so we thought we would get independent facilities just so easily. And I would say that we had all these providers. When we first launched our waitlist, it was the end of July. And by the time we went to launch live the second week of August, we had over 9,000 pharmacists and technicians in all 50 states. And that was just from organic social media traction, which we were super excited about. And we launched with just a few facilities in Texas. We launched with 9 facilities and 204 clinicians on the waitlist. We had over 93% conversion rate for clinicians. And within a couple of weeks, we had over 1,000 pharmacists and technicians on the platform and still only a few facilities. So we had to run off to the races to go get more independent facilities.
Facilities that would possibly want to hire these people.
Yes. Independent pharmacies, remote MTM consulting, like boutique consulting. And we thought this is just such a great offering. It will be easy to get these people, but it's very hard to get in touch with them. And so like you can call a facility, but if they have a technician or a pharmacist working, it's never going to make it back to the owner. We went to different conferences where we found that like some of them were like, we want to see you guys being used by more people. And then if we hear about it in a pipeline, we'll give you a chance. And the most successful way to get facilities for us was faxes. We've sent out a ton of faxes, but we thought calling the facilities, going to these conferences, that is what's going to get us more independent pharmacies. But it has been mostly word of mouth referrals and faxes.
It seems to me that you want to make your onboarding and trust less of a pain in the ass than the pain in the ass of doing it the old way.
Sure. There's a couple of things we're doing actually to give that ease of use and comfortability back to the independent facility owners. So when someone applies to your open shift, you actually get to see that person. You see their name, you see their education, their credentials, their years of experience, what softwares they speak, what languages they speak. And then you can click to expand on their profile. You can see their photo. We get rid of all the pain points. Healthcare providers are notoriously terrible resume writers. We've gotten pharmacists that have submitted resumes on a Microsoft Paint file. And so we cut out a lot of that. And we also are doing two-way ratings. So just if you hired, you call for an Uber, and the Uber driver that pulls up hits your mailbox and they have a 2-star rating, you're probably not going to get into the Uber. And so it's the same thing for the pharmacy providers and for the pharmacy facilities. If your pharmacist that's working at your facility has a really bad experience and they felt like management wasn't helping them out and they were understaffed while they were there, or it was just a hostile working environment, then they're going to leave a lower review rating and other people can see that. And the same goes for the pharmacists and technicians. So when you have someone come work for you and they didn't do a great job, we offer two things. One, you can leave them a poor review. But two, if it was just an astronomically bad experience, you can end the shift immediately. We will refund you. And then we will suspend that person from the platform as we do an investigation. because we're not trying to have some of the experiences with our platform that we've heard from other independent owners with some of our legacy competitors where they say, I don't know who's coming. They just send someone in. I paid an astronomical amount to get someone in here last second because I needed someone and they were terrible the whole time. But what was I to do?
I think that's a huge thing. So you're saying that some of these other firms, you don't know who's coming in. It might have been the guy 3 miles away that got fired for whatever, another pharmacy.
And there's no two-way ratings for them. It doesn't incentivize them because they're trying to make money. The staffing companies want to make money off the owner. They want to make money off their people.
Let's say that you were just in the mood not to be so cautious, but this rating system does that for you, right? The people can not accept them.
Yeah, so it keeps both parties accountable. And one of the things that we're working on building out is a preferred provider list. So let's say, Mike, you have shifts at your facility, at your pharmacy, because you had someone call out. And so you had to have a ShiftRx provider come in. They did an amazing job. And you feel comfortable letting them come into your pharmacy and being able to step out for an hour or two. So you'd be able to add them to your preferred provider list, invite that person to come back for that shift early before you open it up to the rest of the network, and then get a further discount on commission because it incentivizes the providers and it also incentivizes you. And so what we do with that discount on commission is we give a little bit more from our cut back to the provider as well and say, hey, you did such a rockstar job here. They have a preferred provider shift open. They want you to be that preferred provider. You'll get paid $4 more an hour to take it. And then you have that comfortability back. And we think all of this can be done very easily with technology. The technological stack makes this easier, whereas you have these traditional staffing agencies and they have a roster of people they have to call. They have to employ all of these recruiters. But we allow the providers to self-source. Nobody knows better what you want to work than you.
All right. So ladies, it seems to me that when you're trying to raise some funds, you're not the old school. And so you're not the typical in with the good old boys, that kind of stuff. So they may not be real interested in a startup. You've got some people that are more interested in a startup because they don't like the good old boy kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say that's 90% of VC funding is for startups.
When you guys look for investors, what feedback do you get? And have you had to pivot that search for investors over time?
Feedback from investors, what we have learned along this journey is that you should not listen to whatever feedback they give you. It's probably not real. There's a big saying in the startup community that's believe the no, not the why. And so any reason that they give you is probably BS.
They're trying to bring you down?
They don't understand the space. There's a lot of FOMO. If they see another investor saying, I'm going to invest in this, then you'll have a bunch of investors at once. But someone has to take that first bite.
They want to jump in, but not till someone else jumps in.
And so for us, like we raised a small friends and family round from literally friends and family and a couple strategic angels, small checks, 5 and 10K. And then we're raising our seed right now. But people are they want to see other investors are really in on this. And some of the really good investors out there have been conflicted out in investing in us because they're invested in another gig work platform. There's 6 or 7 large gig work platforms that have been done that are newly minted unicorns. So they're worth over $1 billion. They're less than 5 years old, but they're on the nursing side. And when you look at nurses, there's 4.5 million nurses. And so to them, that's a bigger market. But what we found that was very interesting is that only about 30% of nurses will work PRN full-time or in addition to their regular job, whereas pharmacy professionals, there's about 1.3 million of them, we found over 90% will work PRN in addition to their full-time job or whether they're semi-retired or they're in school. Pharmacists love working PRN.
Some of these investors, they might listen to you, but because they don't know the business, they're saying, all right, you're throwing out numbers and I trust you, but are we looking at the right numbers and things like that? I can see where they're just waiting for someone to jump in. Let VC Susie do the work. But if Susie puts in X whatever, then we'll put
in
X.
We'll put in X.
Because they say,
yeah,
we know Susie. She's not stupid. She did the legwork.
That's exactly how it works. Yeah. And so we have a big data room where it has all of our research, our traction, which, you know, actually, when you look at our traction, it has been incredible. We launched 8 weeks ago as of yesterday. So we've only been live for 2 months. We have over 3,000 providers, so pharmacist technicians on the platform. We have over 60 facilities. We have over a 2 million reach on TikTok. We have built this all organically with our small team since we started this in May. And we didn't add Maggie or Chad until June and August. So really, Leanne and I started this in May, and we've had really great organic growth.
It sounds like to me that's good progress. Those sound like good numbers. Is there a bottleneck somewhere? If you could wave a magic wand, would it be more investors? Would it be more facilities that need help? Would it be more providers?
More facilities.
You can invest in whatever you want to, but if you're really going to make it, then you've got to have the dollars changing hand between providers and facilities.
More facilities makes it easier for us to get more investment. It looks better for our numbers. And there is a break-even point here where if we get enough facilities and we have enough providers and enough shifts, then we don't need investment dollars. We can pay ourselves.
The common misconception just fundraising too is just if they don't understand healthcare or specifically the pharmacy space. And like Autumn mentioned, they think we're just servicing independent pharmacies and the market's not big enough, but we can do hospitals, we can do grocery chains, clinics.
And we're talking to those types of clients, but enterprise sales have a longer sales cycle. Like they'll take anywhere from 6 months to 12 months, even 24 months, depending on how large of an enterprise you're talking. Whereas these independent facilities are the easiest barrier to entry. There's usually one decision makers for anywhere between one location to 35 locations, and then they can just sign on.
The challenge is these smaller guys, let's say independent pharmacies, they might be easier to meet and get them going. But by the nature of them being smaller, they don't bring in enough revenue for you. But if you find somebody that's a big enough crowd to bring in revenue, then they have all those layers of leadership that you have to go through to have them take a bite at first.
Exactly right. So if we have a pharmacy, for example, in Texas or California, they're an independent pharmacy and they need two technicians a week. That's 8 shifts a month, which you could objectively look at that and be like, that's great. Because we don't have recruiters and because we have such low commission fees, we're maybe making like $15, $12 sometimes off that one technician shift. Whereas hopefully when we close one of these big enterprise sales, that will keep us alive and being their primary per diem platform. And we're also looking into like getting into long-term placements, but it just does take some time. And so a lot of people will go raise for their startup pre-product, pre-revenue, so that it gives them what we call a runway. So a length of time in which they're getting paid and they don't really have to worry about how they're going to eat or pay rent. For us, we did get an investment offer at the very beginning from a famous accelerator, and the deal was just very bad. Like we were looking at raising at that time. And so we would have sold, I think altogether, like 30%, 35% of the company, which some people would argue you do what you need to do in the early stages, but it leaves little room to sell for later rounds. And also, you know, you're not as well incentivized. If we're the founders of the company and we only own 4% of the company at the end of the day, like you're going to work way harder if you own, you know, 20 or 30% of your company.
Ladies, at your best times, when things are cooking, I know the feelings that go along with that, the enthusiasm and the dream and things like that. What emotion comes in at your worst times? Is it fear? Is it anger? Is it frustration? What feelings do you get at the lowest times in a business like this?
It's just been an emotional roller coaster, highs and lows throughout every day. It's not just one day super high. It's just constant throughout the day. And, you know, when we get emails or phone calls of pharmacists really excited about using our platform, that really helps too.
I grew up very blue collar. My family was wiped out in 2008. We were homeless the entire time I was in high school. And my parents were going back to school and we were staying with family and friends. And to me, I know what it's like for someone to just need to get a little extra money and to be able to leverage their skills to make extra money or to learn a new specialty that helps them get a higher paying job. I was like, we have to do this. We were like, this can change people's lives. We should go for it.
How old are both of you?
27.
I'm 27. Yeah, we're 27. She's older than me, like way older.
You know Gary Vaynerchuk?
Oh, yeah. Gary Actually, v. I do know the wine guy, right?
the wine guy. He's wine, and then he had such a good YouTube show that he went and did more of an entrepreneurial show.
I learned about him when I was doing my other business, the social media business. I had a small social media business when I was in the Navy that I just did on the side.
He's very interesting. I don't agree with everything he says, but he's very interesting. But one of the things he says, the time till you're 30, now is the time to do exactly what you guys are doing. Now's the time to do it. It's not that dream when you're 40 to do it, when you have people depending on you and kids and things like that, elderly parents and that kind of thing. Now is the exact time to do this. It's time to figuratively, you know, four or five guys living together in an apartment, you know, and using that money to do this kind of thing. If you don't do it now, when are you going to do it? And you talk about savings and things like that, but there's a hell of a lot you get to do from the time you're 30 until you die at 80. You got 50 more years to do stuff. There's other listeners that have dreams like this. What lessons are you learning?
I would say like doing this has taught me to be like more consistent and disciplined just overall on like a day-to-day basis, even just like public speaking and things like that. Like you just get a lot better at it and more comfortable and just confident.
I will say, so yes, when you're young is the time to do it. I think there are different circumstances and the stars really aligned for us because both Leanne and I, when we first graduated high school, we're both helping support our families financially in different ways. And so not everyone has that luxury. But if you have an opportunity in your life where you are unencumbered and you're not financially supporting someone else, then that is the opportunity to take it. And I don't think, even if ShiftRx ever shuts down and we have no savings and no job, I will never look back on this and be like, I wish I hadn't done it. But I think there are many times in your life in which you'll look back and be like, I really wish I would have done that. And you, I think everyone knows someone that's, oh, I had the idea for Uber, or I had the idea for LinkedIn first, or I actually came up with this. Execute. You have to execute. And that is every single day on this job. There's a really famous saying where it's like, you never want to be the smartest person in the room. I, for a fact, know that I am never the smartest person in the room. I'm okay with that. But every single person that you meet in this business, and not just this business, but any business, there is something to learn from them. Even if you think that person has an ego or they're arrogant or something, there is a lesson to be learned from every step in life and from every person. And I think you can walk away with a negative outlook on that person or on that business or that point of your life, but that won't do anything to help you. If you look at the positives and you extract the positives from each experience, every conversation, it will help you build more skills as you move forward.
We've had like hard lives. We've worked multiple jobs, taking care of our families. Like doing this like really set us up for success.
My mom, she's going to write into Mike and be like, she had the best, like, because I had a very privileged early childhood. My parents were both Marines and then realtors, and we got wiped out by the 2008 crash. So we had to restart. And my parents actually have been a huge inspiration for this because my dad, who is now in the Air Force Reserves and he's a cop, they both went back to school. My mom became an occupational therapist. My dad became a cop. They both did this while I was in high school. So when I first started college, we were all in college together. And my mom was like, I'm not too old. And what's funny about it is that her original dream was to become an occupational therapist. And my dad's original dream was to become a cop. But they had so much money in real estate, they kept building on that. And even though, obviously, I'm sure neither of them would want to go through it again, I think there are little blessings in disguise because now they're both doing careers that they find to be very fulfilling.
My kids are going to keep therapists in business for a long time.
That's a symptom of the Gen Z. How old are your kids?
I got 10 of them. So they're from like...
You have 10 kids?
Yeah, I have 5 boys and 5 girls. So they're
30. Oh my gosh.
30 down to 13.
What an even balance you
even
got there.
Even balance.
Yeah, how'd you plan that?
I don't know. They're all single births and... I say I've got 10 kids and my wife says she has 11 kids. I'm not sure how that math works out. Oh, they're going to keep therapists forever in business. I just hope when the therapist rats me out that they're going to say, look, parents, they're just a couple of schmucks that met each other and got married and had kids. I hope it leads to understanding, not to blame. Man, if they do, so what? I can't control that.
When you are so busy, you don't have time to be depressed. Even during this, we have these lows, but there's no time to sit around and be sad.
I've had a lot of immigrants on the show, and they may not have been financially destitute, but nearly every one of them had that drive coming to America.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my parents are immigrants and they don't even leave in depression, none of that. Like, if you were like upset, they were like, what are you talking about? They would get mad at you.
We'll give you a reason to be upset.
Yeah, yeah.
But see, for your kids, because you have 10 kids, I feel like also the other people we ran into that are very successful or are very motivated are people that come from larger family groups, because there's almost like a scarcity thing there. And so you're constantly, you have to learn how to share. You have to learn how to co-inhabit. You have to learn how to be responsible because you have all these other siblings.
Likely the only reason I do this show is because I was the youngest boy in our family. I came from 12 kids. And so when you've got, whatever, 7 older siblings, something like that, you have juvenile humor and you do things to get a laugh out of people. And that's just the way you do it in your family structure. And so I think some of that comes over to the show here. Maybe it's an attention seeking thing. And I don't make apologies for that, because if I didn't have that, I maybe wouldn't be doing this kind of thing. So there's always reasons why you're doing something. And I guess it's the old, you turn the negative into a strength kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting, because both you and Leanne are the babies of the family.
Hey.
We thrive. We got to prove ourselves.
I'm the oldest. For me, it's I need to do this because to me, this is the quickest way to build generational wealth to keep myself from being in that position. And then I can take care of my family and I can do all these things.
I used to read a lot before I became like 40. I'd read every night in bed, business books and things like that. But as soon as you turn 40, you're like, this crap's all the same. You're reinforcing these things. All this stuff's the same. Now I'm just going to speak and everybody else has to listen. But I tell you, on the articles that I would always read, like in Inc. magazine, I read a lot of Inc. and Entrepreneur magazines. And every single person in there had a lot of setbacks, not me. I didn't put myself in a position that would make for a good Inc. article, because they would say, Mike started here and then he got really nervous and then he did this. It all went fine, but then he got really nervous again and it all went fine. And then he got really nervous again. The point is, my struggles maybe been through anxiety, but every person in those articles, if they haven't had 3 pretty big life challenges, the article is probably not about them. They probably are not even going to appear in the magazine, just because who wants to read about just a continual climb? It's not that exciting, and there's nothing to learn by it. So you ladies, whatever great things happen with Shift RX or negative things happen, you're on the right path. You're winners and you have a lot to teach us all, and you're going to have a fascinating career, whatever it should be. Way to go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, we will handle anything that gets thrown at us.
And I would say, don't knock against yourself, though. Anxiety is very real. And I think that is a setback, because you are your own critic and your own worst enemy all the time. And we all have that little voice in our head that's like, don't do this. You're going to fail. Who do you think you are? The imposter syndrome does not go away when you're doing a startup. In fact, I think it just amplifies. And kudos to you as well for starting this podcast. We're big fans of it. The team, we listen to it. We put it in our team huddle.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You guys accidentally sent an email that went my way. It was just between your teams, but it said, we're going to have to talk to old crazy Mike this afternoon.
We'll add you to our Slack.
Leanne and Autumn, boy, great having you on. Thanks for your story, because in the end, whatever happens, it's going to be a lot of success. And so thanks for bringing us on your journey of success, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you for having us. We love talking about it.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Mike. Yeah, we're trying to make a difference here, especially for pharmacists and technicians that's going on, and we're going to continue to strive for that and keep our mission first.
Very good. All right, ladies, we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, okay. Mike. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.